responsible for spoiling the surprise I was going to spring on Gambo this segment, but
I
thanks a lot for ruining
it. I saw it in a tweet.
Did you?
Guy is like, why is Jake Lamb playing today? In my voice. I'm like, wait a second, Jake Lamb's playing?
Yeah, I saw the lineups got posted about 20 minutes ago, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to put that in my back pocket, and I'm going to spring that on Gambo the next time we talk about the Diamondbacks and sit back as he loses his mind.
Man. Why is Alex Avila playing today?
Listen, I don't dig deep into personal lives. I mean, is he married to somebody related to the Lovello family?
Listen,
here's the thing. Jake Lamb I'm not going to go crazy on this one. I know you want me to. He put the bat on the ball yesterday and drove a couple of line drives out to the outfield. Okay? Wow. He didn't strike out the two times he was up. They pinch hit for him, which they should have, with a lefty on the mound. But he made contact. He drove the ball. Made two outs, and he's having an absolutely awful season. But it's not like if he would have struck out two times last night and they were putting him in a lineup today, I would have lost my mind. If he would have struck out two times last night.
But because he made contact.
But it was good contact. It was quality contact. He drove the ball. It wasn't a pop-up, you know, to the shortstop. He hit line drives. In the gap, they're doubles. But he hit them at guys. So I'm not going to go crazy here yet. But, he's got to get out of this. Like, he can't, like, there's not, again, short leash. I'll give him one or two more days, but like, even if he's hitting the ball and he's not getting on base, something's got to change.
He's hitting eighth in the lineup today. Interestingly, the lineup that's out, no Nick Ahmed. Nick Ahmed is not in there tonight. Ketel Marte is your starting shortstop this evening, and he's batting leadoff, followed by Cole Calhoun, Sterling Marte, Escobar, Walker Peralta, Stephen Vogt, Jake Lamb at first base hitting eighth, Ildemaro Vargas getting the start tonight, and at second base.
Nick Ahmed is a great defensive player, and he had a decent offensive year last year. He's hitting 083.
Yeah.
He's not hitting the ball. And, you know, you got to make some changes here. Calhoun's at 125. Escobar's at 148. Peralta's at 174. Kelly's at 188. Ahmed's at 083. And then Lamb. So that's potentially 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of your starters who are batting below 190. Mm-hmm. You can't have six starters batting below 190.
They do.
I mean, it's you can't. You're not going to win any baseball games like that.
They do. I mean, I think Carson Kelly's one. And he's not in the lineup today, but Carson Kelly's 188 batting average is the best among those six players that you just mentioned. And I want to talk about change here in a minute because something very interesting happened in last night's game. But first, to kind of pay off the tease, if you will, the Arizona Diamondbacks are 2-5. They don't have the worst run differential in the league, but it's close. They do have tied for the worst record in the league. They have the third worst team batting average in the league, the eighth worst team ERA in the league. I hate to say it. It pains me to say it. But through the first week of this season, the Arizona Diamondbacks have been the worst team in Major League Baseball.
Yes. They are the worst team.
I don't like saying it. I don't want to say it. No. I don't want to think it. But as I was watching that game last night, I started looking at some of the numbers, and I'm like, you add it all up. They have been the worst team in Major League Baseball over the first week of the startup season.
Starting pitching, no good. I don't even know how you describe the offense. How do you describe an offense in which almost everybody on your team is batting below 190?
Yep.
Like, how do you describe that? They're batting as a team. You said it earlier.
196.
Yeah. You know how many runs they've scored in seven games? 20. 20 runs in seven games. I mean, it's pathetic. I mean, it's so frustrating because I love the Diamondbacks. I root for them. I want them to win so badly. And to see that last night, it's just... Now, listen, Torrey, I'll give Torrey credit. He pinch hit for Peralta, pinch hit for Lamb. He tried. He tried. Now, neither one of those pinch hit situations worked out. Vargas pinching for Peralta popped up.
Yep.
But he tried. Like, he tried. Peralta had never been pinch hit for before in a regular situation.
In a
regular game situation.
And that's what I was kind of alluding to a moment ago. Pinch hitting for Peralta. Guys who follow this more closely than I, guys like Nick Bocoro and Steve Gilbert, they both reported last night in the moment that prior to Thursday, prior to last night, Tori Lavello had pinch hit for David Peralta three times in his 3 years as manager. None of them were performance related. September 2018, they wanted to give him rest because they were losing to the Rockies 13-2. They were getting blown out, so they pinch hit for him.
Okay.
July of 2019, he pinch hit for Peralta because Peralta was experiencing some shoulder discomfort during the game. And in the final game of the regular season of 2017, before they played the Rockies in the wild card game, Lavello pinch hit for Peralta in order to give him just a little bit of rest.
Never for performance.
Never
for performance.
One time has Tori Lavello pinch hit David Peralta for performance until last night.
Do you know how many times they showed David Peralta in the dugout after he pinch hit for him? He looked like he was going to cry. I swear, I said it to Chelsea. We were watching the game. She watches every game with me. It looked like he was going to cry. David Peralta looked like he was going to cry. He had been taken out of the game for performance. Leader on this team, the freight train.
Absolutely.
Taken out. He looked so upset. But listen, I give Lavello credit. It's a short season, and you don't have time to let these guys work through these issues. You got to try different things to see who is going to get going.
And I'm glad you phrased it like that, because that's why I'm so conflicted about this Lamb thing, because I want him to do the same thing with Jake Lamb.
No, I don't.
I want him to take Jake Lamb out of this lineup.
Oh, yes. Okay, yes.
I want him, yes. And that's what I meant by that. Yeah. I'm sorry if I misspoke. I want him to do what he did with Peralta to Jake Lamb. I want
him
to take him out of this.
No, pinch hit for him.
No, I don't want him in the starting lineup today.
Okay.
I think we've gotten to the point now where somebody else other than Jake Lamb needs to be in this lineup tonight. All right.
Is he the DH tonight?
First baseman tonight.
First base. Okay.
First baseman. Somebody else needs to be in this lineup. You need to
– Vargas.
Well, Vargas is in at second. But you need to have Dalton Varsho, who had a nice first at bat last night, drawing that walk the way he did.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie. I would rather have Madison Bumgarner as the designated hitter right now than Jake Lamb. I'm not kidding.
I don't think you are.
I'm not joking. That's not a joke. If you said to me right now, Jake Lamb's the DH, I would rather have Bumgarner as the DH.
Yeah. Peralta, after last night's game, I have to do a better job, and I understand.
I have to do a better job. For me, I have to do a better job. I have to do my job. I have to be better in the home plate. That's it. I'm not doing well right now, and I know it's part of the game, but I have to figure it out. We got no time.
So when I hear this, and I'm not hearing it from you, but when I hear this, he's too stubborn, he's too loyal, he's too stubborn, he's too loyal, talking about Tori Lavello, I will probably always point to the fact that he pinch hit for David Peralta for the first time ever in his career for a performance-based replacement and say, well, is he? You know, now, again, I don't want to – I'm shocked that Jake Lamb is still in that lineup today. That I don't understand. But Torrey has shown a willingness that he understands. Okay, this is a 60-game season. They have basically – I did the math in my head today. They've basically played the equivalent – of about 20 games in a regular 162-game season. That's what 7 games equates to in a 60-game season.
Okay.
It equates to about 20 games.
Does it feel worse?
Sure.
It feels worse.
Because they've been the worst team in baseball.
And it's because of the way they're playing.
Yeah. It feels a lot worse because they've been the worst team in baseball this week.
The freaking Rockies are 4-1. The Padres are 5-2. They got three teams that are playing well. The Rockies, the Padres, and the Dodgers are all playing well.
Yeah. Hold on. Torrey, pregame. Why Nick Ahmed isn't playing? Let's hear from Tori Lavello right now.
Total transparency here. He feels fine. It's not a rest because, you know, physically he's fatigued. I just think, you know, it's a fundamental reset button day where he can just sit and, you know, work on some things pregame and find a way to get back into that groove that we've seen him in for a long period of time. And, you know, once again, I know that I outlined this to you guys before the season started. These are some of the thoughts that I was having, and I have to be very mindful of that. And look, we have a few guys that are struggling, so you might see this trend continue. I don't know, but I have some tough decisions to make. You know, he's the leader of our team on defense. He's one of our emotional leaders, but once again, I got to be the parent in the room, and I got to do what's right to help us win baseball games.
There you go.
He got benched.
Fundamental reset.
No, he got benched.
Yeah.
Nick Ahmed got benched because he's hitting 083 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Look, you could say 20% of the season, right? I get that. If they lose this game to the Dodgers, they're 2-6. Then they play the Astros. Then they play the Dodgers again. And then they two more times, and then they play the Astros. They have six games coming up. Six games coming up against the Dodgers and the Astros. Mm-hmm. Six. They're 2-5 right now. They got to win these games. They got to win some of these games here.
I'm not saying they don't. I'm just trying to put it in perspective.
I'm not saying you got to go 5-1.
Yeah.
You can't go 2-4 here.
No.
You can't go 2-4.
And yet you're playing two of the best teams in baseball.
Yes. Yeah, you got to at least play 500 now. You got to just right now hang in there, scratch and claw for victories until your guys can figure out how to hit the baseball.
Today the Pac-12 announced their revised football schedule that is locally highlighted by a week one matchup against your in-state rival. How will the rest of this slate impact ASU this season? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. The announcement came down at 1 o'clock, and at 1:03, I got a text message from one of my best friends in the whole world, who diehard ASU fan. And he's like, please explain to me why ASU is going to open the season against U of A. Please explain it to me. So I did the best I could, but, you know, it's one of those things that you see it, and it's just so shocking. And yet in 2020, everything that you see is so shocking. So here to lend a little perspective to what's going on with all of this from SunDevilSource.com, on the day the Pac-12 announced their reconfigured schedule that has ASU opening the season against the Wildcats. It's Chris Cartman from SunDevilSource.com. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Chris, hope you're safe and well. Thanks for stopping by for a few. We appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Glad to be with you guys.
Shocked? Not shocked? What's it going to be like to open the season against your rival and not close the season against your rival?
Well, you summed it up best. 2020 is a crazy year, so you can't be too shocked with anything. My understanding is, just from a logistical standpoint and flexibility within the scheduling, trying to have some of these rivalry games early, make sure that they get them in. You don't have to fly. You don't have to stay in hotels. They are kind of spread out with other teams throughout the schedule, but none of them are the last game of the year. Some of them are not in the first game, but they're early on. Some of them are more toward the middle. They still were trying to make sure that they could get something that every school would be able to approve, which is 5 home games, 5 road games, and then having not have to play, you know, 3 games in a row on the road and things like that. So there's some obstacles, but this is what ended up being.
You know, Chris, we talked about just flexibility, right? I mean, it's Major League Baseball tried to cram 60 games in 67 days, and it's completely backfiring. They got 6 teams that can't play right now. You got to have some flexibility in the schedule. Now, they don't have a lot in the Pac-12. They don't have a lot, but they've got a little bit. So there's a little bit of a margin for error in case they're not able to play a game where, like, if they couldn't start the season against U of A, ASU could play that game at another time. So at least there is a little flexibility.
Right, yeah. Larry Scott talked about possibly being able to move back that first game to the bye week in the third week if they need to, possibly being able to move a game back to the end of December, or the end of the schedule in December, I should say, if they need to. And nobody's going to say it right now, guys, but let's not rule out the possibility of having some of the games be played before the holidays, and then maybe them having to make a determination based upon how much was able to be concluded of the schedule if they're going to try to play some after, given what you said correctly about Major League Baseball. And let's face it, football, you have a lot more players involved. The NFL is harder than Major League Baseball, in my opinion. And then college sports are tougher than pro sports because you don't have the same financial ability. You can't wall players off quite as much from peers. You have more of them. You have students in classes. They don't have the same ability to live in expensive places or nice kind of areas where they can be walled off. So you just have more intermingling of people. And so this is a logistical nightmare that they're trying their best to sort out.
Yeah, Chris Cartman from SunDevilSource.com, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo show. From best you've been able to tell, what's been the reaction within the Sun Devil football community, the Sun Devil athletic committee, with a schedule that is just so abnormal from what we're used to?
Well, I think people just want to see football. They just want the things that they love, their creature comforts, the traditional types of things. They're willing to give up in order to see some football be played, even if that means that you're playing a Territorial Cup game for the first time to start the season since 1937, right? Like, they just want to see football be played, and they want to see they want to be able to go to the game. Some of them, a lot of them, are fine not being able to go to the games, but just being able to have it on TV and something to talk about with their friends and loved ones and coworkers and everything. And the financial element of this is really important and can't be overlooked, which is that these schools really need football. We're talking about dozens of millions of dollars, and they aren't running, on profit every single year. These guys are, most of the schools are break even or losing a little bit of money. So they're going to have to really shrink down their athletic departments in terms of the number of employees, furloughs, cutting sports, all that stuff on the table if they don't get this in. So there's a lot of stress around this sort of a situation.
Chris, fill me in time-wise, you know, when they're going to start practicing compared to when they were supposed to start practicing. Are there any issues at all? In baseball, we're seeing a lot of top players go down with injuries. Clayton Kershaw's not pitching. Strasburg's not pitching. Verlander's not pitching. Kluber's not pitching. Is there any concern at all with the time frame that they're allowing the teams to get started in practice?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Gambo. There's not a lot of equality in this sort of a situation, because you have some schools like ASU where guys have now been in the weight room for a month, and then you have other places, California schools, University of Washington, where the state laws are prohibiting that. So those guys haven't even gotten into their weight room. The football staff can't even go to the offices and work. So they're sort of behind the curve. But then you have the semester schools are going to be disadvantaged to the fall, to the quarter system schools, because they start later, so they have more time. So there's like these competing sorts of things. And what they've done is typically you have a 29-day window to your first game when you can start camp. For ASU, that's usually right around the first couple days of August. What they're doing this year now in the Pac-12 is they're going to have a 40-day window in which you can have 25 practices. So that starts on, I believe, August 17th.
Yeah.
So they're going to be starting 2 weeks later than normal.
Yeah. Chris, real quick, leave us with this. ASU, we're not getting, regular reports on how they're doing, how many positive tests. Some schools are releasing that information. Some schools are not releasing that information. From what you're hearing, and I think I asked you this the last time you were on, from what you're hearing, how is ASU doing when it comes to their testing?
Yeah, so I have talked to the parents of some players and other people close to them, some high school coaches of players, and of course, sources at ASU. And while I don't have specific numbers, what I've heard is that they feel like it's been overwhelmingly successful. There have been hundreds and hundreds of tests administered to their players. ASU has some advanced testing capability with saliva, and the bubble has held up extremely well at ASU, which I think has also kind of interestingly been the case at a lot of schools around the country doing well. My one question / concern would be what happens when all of their peers start coming back to campuses and there's a lot more intermingling, and that makes it tougher.
Right. Chris, we appreciate the time. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
You got Chris Cartman joining us from SunDevilSource.com. Yes, the Pac-12 announced their reconfigured schedule today, and it will start for ASU against the University of Arizona, as DeAndre Ayton just made another three-point shot.
Woo!
From the corner. DeAndre Ayton,
I'm hitting rewind,
is 2 for 2 from the three-point line. Well, you might have missed one earlier.
Wow.
I don't know for sure. I'm actually going to call an audible on our show sheet here, because this game only has about 45 seconds left. So when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, The Phoenix Suns, 1-0 in the NBA restarts. Take a look at who's 0-1. Take a look at who else is 0-1.
I told you.
Let the fun begin. That's next.
I'm going to wait for three games.
Okay.
All right.
We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back to the Burns and Gambo Show. On this Friday, the first game in the bubble that counts for the Phoenix Suns. And it was bad news for the Washington Wizards.
Bad news for the Wizards.
Very bad news for the Wizards.
125-112. The Phoenix Suns beat the Washington Wizards. Devin Booker, 27 points on 21 shots. He didn't shoot the ball very well. DeAndre Ayton, 24 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 block shots, 11 of 14 from the field, 2 out of 3 from three-point range. That's a hell of a game.
That is a hell of a game.
For those people that said DeAndre Ayton is going to be the, you know, the best lottery pick, like whatever those words were, you will remember him better than I will.
Yeah.
But there were people that were making predictions before the games began, and some people pointed to DeAndre Ayton as being a guy to keep your eye on. DeAndre Ayton had a monster game. That's a great game. That's not a good game. 24 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 blocks, and 2 three-pointers made.
Yeah.
And look, the only thing he didn't do is get to the free throw line. He didn't get to the free throw line once. 11 out of 14 from the field? That's a monster game by DeAndre Ayton.
I mean, I think in a perfect world, he does get to the free throw line, right? Because it means he's establishing himself down low a little bit, and that's still got to be the core of his game.
Knocking down all those threes, man. You're going to go back. You're going to knock down all those threes.
What's really impressive for Ayton is, and I don't have the halftime box in front of me, but DeAndre Ayton was not a real significant part of the first half.
He got
in foul trouble, and he wasn't really putting his stamp on this game. You and I were able to watch most of the first half. DeAndre Ayton was very, very quiet in the first half of that game. He exploded in the second half. And, yeah, I'd like to see some more free throw attempts because it means he's more active down there. But still, no one's going to argue with 24 and 12, 2 of 3 from the three-point line, 11 of 14
three
shooting.
Offensive rebounds.
Yeah, he was very at Booker, as you mentioned, not super efficient with his game, but we were watching the game here in your office. He hit some big shots in that second half. Every time Washington would kind of creep back into the conversation a little bit, Booker would hit a big shot or two in this game. Dario Saric, off the bench, had himself a good game. 16 points on only 6 shot attempts. He was also 2 of 3 from the three-point line, 6 of 6 from the free throw line. He also added 6 rebounds, 3 assists as well. Looking, Cameron Johnson had 12 points. He had 10 at the half, so he cooled down. Mikal Bridges, who was the story of the exhibition season, he ended up with 13 points on 4 of 8 shooting. He made 1 of his 5 three-point attempts. But Gambo, I'm going to bring this up. And I feel like I have to. The Pelicans, and we're going to talk more about them in a little bit.
Okay.
We're going to talk about what happened at the end of that game and why Zion didn't play, because we got some news about that coming up.
Okay.
Pelicans, a team the Suns needed to lose, lost.
Yes.
The Portland Trailblazers, a team the Suns need to lose, are losing.
Okay.
To the Memphis Grizzlies, 114-107.
That's big.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, Memphis is up 5 right now, 4 minutes and 22 seconds to go.
There are teams, if you're rooting for the Suns to force a play-in tournament, there are teams you're just automatically rooting against. So far, one of them has lost, and one of them is on their way to losing. The others are the Sacramento Kings and the San Antonio Spurs. Those are the teams you need to fail if the Suns are going to pass them. Now, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying the Suns' odds got any better. The Suns just played by far.
The worst team in the bubble.
The worst team they will see in the bubble on their schedule.
Yes.
No Davis Bertans, no Bradley Beal, no John Wall.
Yes.
They're no good. Okay, yeah. The Wizards are no good.
It was so bad that every time I was watching the game and a Wizards player made a basket, I didn't even hear K-Ray tell me who the player was, because I don't think they knew.
He might not have known.
I like, man, that's a three-pointer from
somebody.
That was a nice basket right there.
Gotta look.
Oh, and that was a step back. And I mean, I didn't know who any of the players were, and I was trying to rely on K-Ray to tell me who the players were. But he didn't even know. That's how bad the Wizards roster is. You don't know who the players are.
Yeah, so it's far, far, far too early to sit here and – oh, okay, you know what? I'm going to take back what I was about to say. It's not too early to scoreboard watch. I think it's perfectly acceptable to scoreboard watch in this unique environment and the situation. It's too early to look at the early positive results and say, oh, there you go. Here it comes. Suns are going to force a play-in. Not yet. Not like you said when we went into the break.
I want three games.
Three games.
Give me three. If the Suns are 3-0, then we'll chat. If they're 3-0, we'll chat. Memphis is up by 5 over Portland with 3 minutes and 13 seconds left. Okay, now listen. I'm not going to lie to you. You told me, hey, Suns win, Portland loses, New Orleans loses. I'm going to get a little excited. I'll get a little excited. Not too much, but I'll get a little excited. The Blazers have 37 losses. The Suns have 39. If the Blazers lose this game, they're at 38 losses. The Suns are within one game of Portland in the loss column.
Yep.
One game.
Now, once again, let's go, because it's a little complicated, let's go over it again for everybody just so everybody understands how it works. The Phoenix Suns, if they were to force a play-in for the eighth seed in the playoffs, okay?
Yes.
Would have to leapfrog Portland, Sacramento, New Orleans, and San Antonio.
And I'll tell you what. If that happens, it is the biggest story in the bubble, but I don't care what else happens to anybody else. If they end up passing all of the – nobody gave them a snowball's chance in hell.
No.
And even me, and I still don't. I want you to know I still don't.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are able to force that play-in game, to force it, that will be the biggest surprise out of anything that happens in a bubble.
Yes.
I promise you.
Yes.
It will be.
And
they'll basically come out of nowhere.
Yes.
To force it.
I sent you earlier in the week a preview of the restart games in the bubble. And in it, it basically said, and it's a point that I've been making too the last couple of days. I might have even gotten it from them for all I know. They said, look, the only real reason to watch the restart games is the Western Conference, the bottom of the Western Conference, you know, to see which of these teams can force, because someone's going to force a play-in game, all right? They're all within four games or so. All you have to be is within four games of the eighth seed. Whichever team has the best record that is within four games of the eighth seed forces a play-in. Someone's going to do it in the West. Who's it going to be?
Portland's within one.
That's the best story of the restart, right? And I agreed with that. They ranked every single team's chances, and they said, here's why the Pelicans can do it, here's why the Blazers can do it, here's why the Kings can do it.
And they never mentioned the Suns.
They said the Suns can't do it.
They
basically said, we're not even going to bother talking about the Suns because they're not going to do it. They can't do it.
Two minute warning. 2 minutes left, Memphis by 3 over Portland.
Ooh. See, look at you. I've got you doing it now, too.
I mean, I'll watch it. I'll pay attention.
Yeah, I got you doing it, too.
Oh, Jaren Jackson Jr. Ooh.
Is he having a good game?
27 points.
He is having a good game. You're right. So if the Suns can finish within four games of the eighth seed and can leapfrog all those teams, not only will they be the early story of the bubble, because you're right, they would be. Devin Booker's Q rating goes up. DeAndre Ayton's Q rating go up. Everybody starts talking about Monty Williams and the job that he's done and the culture that he's changing. Everybody starts talking about the Suns again as a thing. Now, if they were to even get the eighth seed, they're going to be first-round fodder for the L.A. Lakers. We all get that. Okay, but so what?
I don't care.
So what? Sweep the Suns. Fine. Sweep them. If they could get in, they would not only be the story of the bubble, but imagine the credibility that would be coming their way if they did that. Credibility that they have lacked since the day Steve Nash got traded to the LA Lakers, maybe? Or since Jeff Hornacek's first year with the Suns?
You know what? That was maybe. So out of nowhere, and nobody even remembers that team. Channing Frye was on that team, but not a lot of people remember that team. I would say yes, since they traded Nash, and they ended the 7-second or less era.
Yeah.
From that point, yes, Jeff Hornacek had the one good year, but they didn't even make the playoffs that year.
Yeah. When we come back on
the
Burns and Gambo show.
Portland pulled ahead.
Oh, no.
119.
You guys are behind. Memphis just pulled ahead.
Oh, is our feed behind?
Is that game on TV?
Yeah, it's on NBA TV.
Oh, yeah. I got you.
You got me?
I got you.
All right.
NBA
Portland TV. Just pulled ahead.
We can't go to break. We have to have this play-by-play.
Jordan, now that you're not the voice of the Northern Arizona Suns, since
he still
the Suns
has
don't
another
hold them
year.
Anymore, do you, well, I think
Ja Morant brings the ball across the timeline, gets the high screen, now dribbles into the lane, off kilter layup off the mark, but he's going to go to the free throw line.
Bravo, Jordan. Hey, there you go.
I just want to know who the players are.
That's the voice of the Northern Arizona
What's
Suns
NBA
right
TV,
there.
1308 on Cox?
I think that's it. I don't know. You gotta find it. We gotta know what's
going on. I got it.
Oh, you got it. There it
I
is.
Got it. There it is.
There it is.
There it is.
All
Missed
right.
the shot. Oh. Is that Carmelo?
They're showing you a replay.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, those are.
Come on, Ja Morant. Give on Ja.
Oh,
we'll give you an update on this game when we come back. Plus,
tied. It's tied.
Speaking of the NBA bubble, he was supposed to be one of the marquee players inside the bubble. The Pelicans chasing a playoff spot. Everyone wants to know, where the hell was Zion Williamson at the end of that game last night? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Overtime.
Memphis and Portland went to overtime. Carmelo Anthony hit a big three to tie it up. He tried to hit
a game winner.
Yeah, he tried to hit a game winner. It clanked off the back of the iron.
And then Ja Morant tried to go length of the court, but he fell down. Yep. So that game will go to overtime.
Yeah.
Portland and Memphis. And if you're a Suns fan and you're holding out the slimmest of hopes,
indeed,
you want Portland to lose.
Yeah, indeed. You wanted the Pelicans to lose last night if you're a Suns fan, and lose they did. So I'm not going to complain about it too badly.
Yeah.
But Gambo, you know, because you were watching that game, so was I, that there were a lot of people around the NBA who were like, wait a minute, tell me again why a 20-year-old Zion Williamson, who had a minutes limit, obviously, couldn't at least come into the game on the final possession to provide some sort of a threat?
Well, let me give you – I don't know if you have sound on this, but I'll
– I have Gentry sound.
All right, give me Gentry, and I'll tell you what the GM, Dave Griffin, said.
Okay, here's Alvin Gentry. Wish Zion could have played down the stretch.
Well, of course we wish we could have played him down the stretch, but, you know, he had used the minutes that was given to us, so, you know, that's just – you know, that's the way it is. I mean, we weren't going to stick him back out there. You know, our medical people said that we played him in the minutes that was allowed us to play him. And, you know, we'll just move on. I thought he looked good. I thought he had some good moments. And obviously, you know, we're a much better and a much different basketball team when he's out on the floor.
Okay. Now, here's the GM, Dave Griffin. I appreciate the fact that everyone wants him to play 40 minutes every night. I can promise you, he's not going to. No mistakes were made with how this was handled, other than by me coming forward and expressing this is the clearest way possible. This isn't complicated. He will not play significant minutes in the next game, and he may not in the following game. This is all about the ramp-up time. He did not get the benefit of the things that his teammates got for those 13 days. This is going to take some time. The 13 days was the practice. Williamson did not play basketball because he was dealing with a personal family medical issue, and then because he was quarantining as part of the NBA's reentry process. That meant that he missed out on playing 5-on-5 in practice and in three different scrimmages. They are not going to mess with this kid. They're not trying to win the NBA championship right now. They are not going to mess with him. They got a plan. They're going to follow the plan. And if they lose games because they're following the plan, then they will lose games to not break from that plan. Bad news, huh?
Yeah.
Portland's up by 6.
Portland's hit a couple of shots in overtime. They're up 130 to 124.
See, you made me
Memphis.
See, it's your fault. You made me get my hopes up for about 3 minutes there.
You can still have your hopes up. It's just you're not getting any help from Portland. Okay. Can there be a middle ground on this? And here's what I mean by that. Did Zion Williamson need to play 40 minutes in last night's game? No. Could he have played the last minute? He played, what, 15 minutes? He had 13 points in 15 minutes.
Yes, he plays four different stretches, the start of each quarter.
Yeah.
He would play a little bit.
If I were a Pelicans fan, my retort to that would be, okay, no one's demanding that he plays 40 minutes a game. No one's demanding that you burn him out. Could you have put him back on the floor in the last minute when it was a close game to try to win a basketball game that your team could have used? That, to me, is the compromise here that I don't understand why they weren't more flexible in the moment to saying, hey, this is kind of a big deal game for us here. Let's try to win it. Let's stick our best player back on the court for the last 45 seconds.
Do you know who's in charge of their medical staff there? Aaron Nelson.
Former Suns.
Former Sun, Aaron Nelson, okay? Who a lot of people think is the best in the business at what he does. Aaron Nelson put together the minutes plan for the players based on, you know, the time that they were in the bubble and outside the bubble, and he was on a – Zion was on a different timeline than everybody else. Dave Griffin said conditioning is a word everybody uses. It's really about the ramp-up. It's what our performance team was doing for a load management standpoint for every member of our roster. If you go back and look at the box scores from those scrimmages, there was a reason why they played the minutes they did, and he didn't get the benefit of that. Dave Griffin is steadfast.
I know.
I understand what you're saying, man. Try to win these games. Try to get into the playoffs.
I'm just talking about one more minute. I'm talking about 16 minutes instead of 15.
Sure.
I'm not talking about 40 instead of 15. I'm talking about 16 instead of 15. And again, keep in mind, I'm coming at this as the perspective from a Suns fan. If they don't want to play Zion Williamson down the stretch of these games, fine. That's no skin off my nose, man, because I want the Pelicans to lose. We kind of jokingly argued about that yesterday. I don't want the Pelicans to win these games. I want the Suns to be able to have a chance. If you don't want to play Zion in crunch time in these games, go for it. And for the record, Brandon Ingram had a hell of a look at that shot.
Yes, he did.
Had a hell of a look at that shot.
Rudy Gobert with the game winner.
Yeah, with the two free throws at the end. Scores the
two free throws
the first
to win the
two
game.
Points of that game and the last 2 points of that game. Oh, there's some irony in that.
Here's the thing. You're the GM. You're the head trainer. You tell the head coach, 15 minutes, man. That's all you get out of him, 15 minutes. Then the game's coming down to the wire. Do you automatically, like, buzz in and say, hey, make it 16? Make it 17. No. They had a limit, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, do you all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, hey, never mind what we said earlier, we got to win this game. But then you're contradicting yourself. Don't contradict yourself. Make a plan, and that's the plan. And that's why he said, listen, he's not playing major minutes next game either. So don't even ask me. It's not going
to
happen.
According to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, he was on the Dan Patrick Show. After the Pelicans lost, there was a lot of frustration. Williamson himself was, quote, pissed about his minutes restriction, according to Haynes. Here's Zion Williamson. Last night, he didn't use that word, but he admitted he was frustrated about it.
It is frustrating, but it's not so frustrating because, you know, like, I could easily, they could probably not even let me play, but you know, I'm able to play, so I'm going to do as much as I can while I'm out there.
Memphis Grizzlies are really letting me down here.
Oh, the game's over.
Here, I got you.
They're getting blown out.
I got you all excited about this.
You did.
Losing by 9 to the Trailblazers.
Yes, you did.
Trailblazers are the team to fear in this. They're the team. Especially
I'm glad I made you go back to them because you were going to go to New Orleans.
I was, and then you reminded me that originally I had picked Portland. And
yes.
I'm glad you stuck me to my original prediction because if the Pelicans are going to play Zion Williamson 15 minutes a game, then I tell you right now, Portland's the team best suited to do it because they're Damian Lillard ain't going to let that happen. CJ McCollum ain't going to let that happen. They're going to go all out to try to get that 8th seed in the Western Conference. And keep in mind, Memphis, obviously, currently the owners of the 8th seed in the Western Conference. So this win by Portland does double damage, benefits Portland, damages Memphis. It's a huge, huge game early in the bubble in the NBA.
But you'd rather Memphis hold on to that 8th spot and you as a Suns team closes within the 9th spot. You know, gets to the 9th spot.
You know what?
You're not going to get there. But listen, I'm happy. Listen, again, that's why I said, that's why you making me watch this game right now. I blame you. I was very happy. Very happy and content.
Timeout on
just
the floor.
Talking about the Suns' win.
Can I get a 20 here for a second? Timeout on the floor. Do you see a remote control in front of me? I see one in front of you.
Ooh.
Did somebody ask what channel the NBA TV is on their Cox system? Because it wasn't me. I'm a DirecTV customer. I don't know what channel Cox is. What channel NBA TV is on Cox? I made you do what? Exactly.
Who was the first person
without
that referenced the Portland-Memphis score?
So once again,
who was the first person that referenced the score?
Once again, not only am I in charge of driving the show, I'm in charge of managing your emotions too. Is that what I'm in charge of over here?
You're a little bit like a babysitter.
Oh,
I mean, a little bit like a babysitter.
Oh, a little bit. Come on.
At least you say it.
Yes.
Best paid babysitter I know.
I'm serious.
Yes.
I think
you get paid well to be a babysitter.
I tend to think of it more as a dog walker, but, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
Oh, my
God.
Gosh.
That's good stuff. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the best paid babysitter in the world is going to send it to a break. And when we come back, based off of his D-back summer camp performance, we are expecting to see a pitcher who has turned a corner. Robbie Ray has turned no corner. We'll talk about that next here on the Burns and Gambo Show.